Welcome.
Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Blog Talk Radio, Life Coach Radio Network. This is Nika Annan doing my first show, Create Your Bliss, Blueprints for Manifesting Your Dreams. And this is really exciting because having a radio show was one of my dreams. It's manifested in a way I had never imagined, didn't know was possible. Didn't even think of when I first had this dream. We didn't have internet, much less internet radio. And one of the things I want to talk about today are blueprints for manifesting your dreams. And as this radio show is one of them, I'm also going to talk about some of the amazing people I'm going to have on this show. To do that, I was recently in a training class, and one of my co-students said, my dreams don't come with blueprints. They just come a bright splash on the wall. So I realized that that's something that we can learn and begin to understand and to create is how to manifest the things we really want in life and the things that we know we're here to do. One of the things that I learned as a child is my father was a landscape architect, and when he planted things, when he designed gardens and parks and plantings for cities, he saw it not only in the present moment, but through time, and how plants would grow and change through time. That's one of the things that I've always held in my life, is not just now, but how will it be in 10 years? How will it be in 15 years? What flourishes? What needs that long to come to life? What are short-lived? And the process through which I learned that was being with him while he was on the job and talking about things. And he would intentionally talk to us about it, but also observed what he did with things. And one of our speakers during this show will be an amazing woman named Dr. Vera John Steiner, who talks about the work of Vygotsky, whose work is contemporary with Piaget, but he talks very differently about how children learn, how human beings learn, the role of language. And one of his theories is zonal proximal modality, which is we learn from each other, and that learning is a collaborative, cooperative, creative endeavor, as is becoming humanized and acculturated. So look forward to that. That will be an amazing conversation with Dr. Vera John Steiner. And that leads into then, how do you make blueprints? And what do you do and how do you incorporate your whole being? So my very next speaker is going to be a man named Alan Questel, who is a Feldenkrais practitioner as well as an excellent Feldenkrais trainer. He teaches trainings all over the world. And I originally worked with Alan when I was a volunteer at the Open Center in the 80s in New York City, and it was an amazing experience. Feldenkrais really is based on the principle that we can learn and our body can learn and that we embody our feelings, our knowledge, our emotion, and talks about that a lot of our brain is used to filter our experience. So look forward to that conversation with Alan, which will also involve somatic embodiment of our creativity. And as we embody it, we need to figure out how to deal with our emotions. We need to come to terms with our past. We need to figure out what assumptions we have that are shaping the choices that we make in our life, what we're focusing on, and how do we change that focus. And neurolinguistic programming is a really exciting way to change, to become conscious of our stories, and to consciously change those stories, to participate in them, to reframe, to shift habits, cultures, assumptions, beliefs, and to integrate it into the body, because we can't really make these changes just through our will, just through our intellect, just because we think it should be a certain way. And Dr. Kate Miller, who was one of my coaching teachers, who has worked internationally, China, Japan, and Europe, as well as spending some time in the Peace Corps in Costa Rica, working with Native American communities, is an excellent NLP practitioner. And I had a fabulous experience with her in transforming a toxic reaction to one of my favorite foods in the world, which is chili. So we'll be talking to Dr. Kate Miller, and then, much to my excitement, we're going to have a conversation between Dr. Kate Miller and Dr. Vera John Steiner on creativity. So that's when I'll just get to sit back and learn from. So that's terribly exciting to me as well. Also, I'm going to have an amazing person, Dr. Nina Livingstone, who works with ritual in transformation and change. We're talking about the role of ritual, creating ritual. I think we very often have rituals in our lives that are habituated and that aren't conscious, and this is to make a conscious ceremonial ritual of transformation and supporting our new selves. So watch for Dr. Nina Livingstone. It's so exciting. I'm just amazed and delighted to have found all these wonderful people in the world and to share them with you. We will also talk to Leon Vanderpost. Leon does a school of love and light and uses spirituality and transformational coaching and really includes the spirit and the wisdom and that greater part of ourselves, which to me is an essential part of life and how we live here in coherency. We are spirits inhabiting this beautiful sacred planet, which also has a spirit. And to do that with grace and consciousness, I think, is part of our personal sustainability. How do we thrive? How do we change the world? How do we do better? How do we create what we want to create in a way that takes care of us and allows us to flourish so that we are a part of the transformation and that we don't end up taking from ourselves to the point where we've exploited ourselves and are exhausted and drained? So that's really one of the focuses of my personal work, is that how do you maintain yourself, feed yourself, keep the well full, honor that quiet time, and integrate and utilize all the skills we learn for our own personal self. I have another amazing person coming to talk to me, who is Michael Weiner. And you'll just have to experience Michael's work. It's very unusual, but it is a deep and phenomenal tool for personal transformation. And I have used it to great extent to create boundaries and clarity, which allows me to be more valuable to myself, which is a great skill for all of us, and to be therefore more valuable to others. So these are conversations I'm really looking forward to. Also, Carolyn McIntyre, who's an amazing coach and also works with creativity and does fabulous painting. So those are the people I have lined up so far. So that's a little piece of my dream. And now I want to talk about some of the skills and talents and abilities that we can learn and share with each other, and how important who we are, honoring who we are, learning to hear ourselves, learning to listen to ourselves, learning to be present with joy is in creating a new life, in creating our dreams, in creating those blueprints and making them practical. Because you can't really make something come true if you have a dream that you're holding in one part of your being and there's another part of your being that is devastatingly critical and full of doubt and undercutting. And there's a number of different ways to work with those different tactics that we have for self-criticism, and it's one of the things that I think a lot of people are working on, and it seems to be a certain aspect of Western culture. Without looking for the source of that, I just know that it was something that the Dalai Lama was very surprised by, at how there was not the assumption of innate basic goodness of themselves in many of the people he met in Western world. So there are wonderful tools for working with that, part of which is to use some neuro-linguistic skills, which are to look at the voices, the critical voices, honor them, and give them a different job. And there's different ways of dealing with it. There's an old story, Rose Red and Snow White, which are the two sisters who are out playing in the woods. And everywhere they go, there's this little dwarf who criticizes them. So it's like the inner voice you did this wrong, you did that wrong. They rescue him over and over. He gets his beard cut and caught in a tree, and they trim it, and he's angry because they cut his beard, and he falls in the water, and they put him, pull him out, and he's angry because he's muddy. And that story is a very interesting ending, which is one way of dealing with the inner critic, which is in the scene after the bear, I mean, after the girls cut the beard, a large bear appears. And this inner critic voice, this critical being who this young innocent part has rescued over and over and over again, is criticizing them that they didn't rescue him right and it wasn't done properly and they, you know, trimmed his beard and why did they do that? And the bear comes up and rather than negotiating with him, smacks him down with his large bear paw, and that's the end of the bear, and the bear has a brother, and the bears, which are an element of healing in many traditions, marry the sisters and waltz merrily off into the future. So that's one way of dealing with the inner critic, which is to have a wise and healing part of ourselves, disengage it, deflate it. There's also ways of reframing, of offering that voice a role. Very often the parts of us that are critical or hesitant are pieces that have, through experience in our lives, learned that certain things endanger us. The problem with this is things that endanger us when we're 3 or 5 or 15 are not the same things that endanger us when we're mature adults trying to make a dream come true. So to look back, and there's an NLP exercise that honors this, to look back, engage that part of the self, thank it, honor it, see the gifts that came from that, and then ask how it can support you in moving forward. And if it's not a part that can do that, there's also processes for setting that belief aside, giving it a place in a museum of antiques. So a number of amazing skills, and those are some of the things that hopefully we'll get to talk to Dr. Kate Miller about how to make some of those neurolinguistic programming changes to our bodies, to our beings, to our knowledge. One of the things that always fascinated me in life is the placebo effect. What is the placebo effect? How does that work? If it works 50% of the time, what is that? What is that part of ourselves? And not so much to understand it from a scientific point of view, but how do we engage that part in ourselves? How do we find the part that believes that something will heal us, transform us, better us, ease whatever pain we're in, release the trauma in our body, in our spirit, in our soul, in our psyche, in our emotional body? And that's been a lifelong exploration for me, of really looking at that and honoring it and knowing there is a deep wisdom that we have that is us, that is our body, that is our being, and that part of the process of acculturation is to teach us how to survive in the group that we live in, and there are prices to it. So how do we go back then and disengage some of the habituated beliefs that don't serve us in order to allow the placebo effect of life, in order to allow that capacity to engage whatever it is in us that allows us to heal because we're being told, given the information from a trusted source, that whatever we're doing will heal us. And that looks a lot at neuroplasticity, how do we learn, how do we reroute what we believe, how do we think about those things, how do we create beliefs, habits, processes. And there's a number of people who work with this, and I'm really fascinated. Feldenkrais has been a very important part of my life. My time that I spent working with Alan in New York, I learned a lot about how to listen and engage and honor my body and how to learn how to do new things, how to step back, separate from the belief that was creating the disease or the illness or that was participating in it and to move forward in a different way. And there's a story that they tell about Moshe Feldenkrais that he had worked on a woman who had had severe pain and walked in a distorted position, and he had released a great deal of this for her, and he's watching her walk away out of a window, and as she walks across the street, she gets more and more crumpled and back into the position her body was in before they worked. And he ran out and caught her and asked her what was going on, and she said she was thinking about all the people who had taken care of her when she was ill and what would happen to them and what would it mean about their love if she was okay. Really fascinating how our compassion shows up in our lives. And how do we work with changing those patterns? That's one of the things that I do in my life and that I strive to do with clients. One of the other things that I have found is an amazing process, which is working with altered states of consciousness. And my part of my background was growing up in an indigenous community here in the Americas and experiencing some beautiful ceremonies that involved a lot of ritual music and dance and movement and preparation, closing down the ceremony. And so experiencing that in a creates a sense of unity and healing on a non-conscious level. And Dr. Felicitas Goodman, who we can't interview because she has passed on, did some work with ecstatic trance, and she came to my mother when she was doing this research and said, oh, I know your children know how to do this. So she worked with body postures and developed a process by which you go into altered states of consciousness. She gathered images of statues, of clay figurines, of cave drawings from around the world, and found that inducing a trance with a rattle in a specific body posture created specific experiences. So that's one of the things that I work with clients. And the whole assumption behind that is that we all have our own journey. So it's not shamanistic journey in the traditional way where there's a specific place that you go, but that each of us has our own wisdom and our own connection, and our own path, our own journey. So we create a safe, strong, clear container. And then there's an invocation, a process. People go in, take the posture, we go into the posture, we create the trance work. Then we come out and share the process verbally, artistically, in any way that feels appropriate to the members in the group. And again, I'll talk more about this in detail. The thing that's fascinating is it activates the theta part of the brain, has a very calming effect on the nervous system. And doing this in a repetitious way, in a ritualized way, over a period of time, can relieve all sorts of inner stresses and beliefs by looking at things and having them release. It's a very interesting, calming process, and I know there's a couple of institutes that have used her work in Austria and Germany that have a lot of the scientific basis and understanding of this. And I'm not up on that, but I do know it has an amazing effect on people, and it's a beautiful and amazing process. And that the more of reality that we can include, the more we can honor our intuition, our subconscious, our emotions, our altered states of consciousness, the more we can open to and feed the fire of our creativity and allow it, the more we're able to manifest our dreams, our way of being, and what it is that we're really here to do. As I was going through school and trying to figure out what to do with my life and what to do with this passion and interest and fascination with how we be in the world and what it is we do and how we do it and how people from different cultures are so different and what are the amazing similarities and what are all the different ways of knowing the kinesthetic, knowing sensory, all of the different senses, not just the five, but our intuition, what our body knows, our kinesthetic knowing. And I never really wanted to be a therapist because I didn't want to deal with the past. And the thing that I find so exciting and inspiring about coaching is that it's really about the future. It's really about how to create the future, how to create what we want, how to move from if we're doing things that are not feeding us, not taking care of us, that are not personally sustainable. How? Not is it possible and not understanding why we're doing them, which is important, but how do we change that? How do we do something we don't know how to do? How do we look at what we're doing and if we feel unsuccessful, become successful, redefine what we mean as success? Is that an external definition of success? Is that an internal? I don't feel fulfilled, looks successful from the outside. I don't feel like I make a difference. I feel like I make a huge difference. It doesn't look successful from the outside. How do we find a balance? How do we find an understanding of that? How do we have a dream and then make that come true? What are the steps to doing that, and what is the role of dreams? You know, do we need to fit our dream into a specific format? I originally thought I would be a DJ on a late night New York City jazz show. But that's just because that's what I knew people on radio did. So to honor that, what would be fascinating for me is to share the dialogue or the conversation, the things, the part of humanity, of being here, of the amazing adventure of being alive that interests me, and share that with people and talk to other people about that process. But that was a dream that had to evolve. And to honor what the dream really was about, which I'm still not quite sure, but about sharing information. So to really mine for our values, for our priorities, for what our passion in life is, to honor our choices, to look at our belief system that shapes those dreams in a certain way, that may be not what our soul's destination is, that we may have something deeper and bigger than our dreams, than the small version, you know, the prayer, you know, grant me what I want, or something larger and greater, something more appropriate. So to have found coaching as a way to reach to people and to engage people and to reflect back to them not just the wholeness and intelligence and creativity of their being, but their potential, and to help them honor the existing framework that they have used to build their life, which is wonderful and exciting and obviously very successful because they are where they are, which means they've survived and flourished in some way, and to take that and to create a blueprint from that of where to go next and what to do. And to have a dream and really honor it. So I have a little story to tell about this. I now have a house out in the mountains, and when I had sold the house I had before. I was going to leave New Mexico. I'm in Santa Fe, New Mexico, but I had a job I loved, so I didn't have a place to live. And I did all my homework. I did all the classes for financially and what do you need to have a mortgage, and I researched every neighborhood and I looked at all the places that were affordable and that were appropriate, and I knew where I wanted to live, and I had this dream and I wanted to live up in the mountains, and I wasn't even allowing myself to look there. Till I finally said, well, I should honor my heart's desire and I can go look. And just because I don't know how it's going to happen doesn't mean it's not going to happen and it's not possible that it will happen. So I drove out, found a beautiful piece of land, and it ended up being quite an adventure, but I have my dream home. And part of that was saying to myself in the beginning, having done all the groundwork, don't limit your dreams. Don't let a belief system hold you back and not create and not honor and not allow the passion of what you really want to happen. So I think that that's a big piece of creating a blueprint, is honoring what you want and getting really clear about the details of it. Like, is it a mental construct, or do you want, the reason I bought the piece of land I had is I got out of the car when I got here and it smelled right. And so it fit on a very deep level. You know, get those signals from your body, the somatic signals, there's a relaxation, there's a trust, there's a sense of, yes, this is what I'm looking for, this is what I want, this is where I want to be. And how to be flexible, how to be passionate and engaged and ambitious and open to whatever else can happen. Like, not define success by moving to the next rung in the ladder of wherever your profession is, but to say, what comes next? Where is the picture? How big is it? How can I be? And how does this fit in my dreams? So there's a balance between the engineering mind and creating the schema and doing all the practical, doing the research, doing the knowledge, doing the learning, and at the same time having the dream, because you need both. In order to make things happen, there needs to be the how-to, the process, how do the pieces fit together, how does it work. We have this wonderful balance in our lives. We are physical beings. We have the amazing joy of being bodies that live in time and space, that take structure and discipline and are subject to the laws of physics in the material world. So things can't happen simultaneously. They can't happen immediately. Plants grow. You plant a seed. It takes a period of time before it sprouts, before it flowers, before it pollinates, before it seeds. And yet if you don't have the vision, there's no reason to do any of it. So there's a way to find the balance in there. And remember the sacredness of time, that everything has a process, that when you plant a seed, when you plant a dream, when you plant a vision, when you have a hunger, when you have a goal, that you work at it. But it also takes time to manifest. If you plant a seed and you go dig it up every day to see how it's doing, it never grows. And if you plant a seed and don't take care of it and don't work at it and don't nurture it and don't water it, keep the ground moist, keep the rabbits from eating it, it doesn't grow either. So there's a way to integrate those and balance them and use them to feed ourselves and create a dream, a vision of the world that is who we are and what we're here to do. So having gotten off into all that wild and abstract stuff, there were a couple of things I also wanted to talk about, some of the inspirations I've had, some of the patterns of looking at the world, and maybe I can talk about a couple of NLP exercises. So one that I use frequently that I found very useful and I didn't really realize was an NLP process is reframing. So which is when you tell yourself a story, then to stop and look at it from a different perspective and tell a different story, a totally different story. Tell a story where you're a victim, tell the exact same story where you're the hero. I mean, one of these, like Nietzsche's, I forget the exact phrase, eternal recurrence or whatever it is, where he has this vision that you get up every morning and have the exact same pattern every day. And it can be that, but the exact same pattern every day can be that you wake up in the morning and look around at the world and fully engage it, and in that moment and every moment of that day, you be your best to be fully present and participate and engage and see where it leads you. And I think that's a part of personal sustainability, is that we keep our interest alive, we keep our vitality, we keep our curiosity, we keep that sense that we are engaged in the world and that we participate in creating meaning. And that if we're involved in something that is repetitious and boring and unnurturing to ourselves, how do we look at it differently? How do we honor the part usually that's wounded or hurt or disengaged in that process and find another place in ourselves to interact with it and to create it and to find joy or to disengage from the activity if it's not one that works for us? How do we use our mind and our wisdom and our creativity to be here with joy? And how do we allow ourselves to choose joy? Because the other things are, emotions are that which embody us, which we move through the world, which give us the energy and the vision to create. And that while we don't often experience it that way, we do have a choice about, and that affect our body in different ways. I remember being so touched by Thich Nhat Hanh's discussion about anger and saying, oh yes, when you feel anger, acknowledge it, invite it to come sit down beside you. Oh anger, my little friend, I haven't seen you in a long time. How are you today? And I actually did that once. I was very angry about an event, and I walked into the bathroom at work and said that out loud and laughed. And I was energized by the anger, but I wasn't taken over by it. It didn't run my life. It didn't make my choices. And I was able to make a much clearer choice about that. So again, the reframing, the being present to where we are, and then also staying focused on the big dream. Where are we going? How do we make it happen? What piece of my dream is manifest in the moment? What part that feeds me, that keeps me going? And how did this, in that event, what got triggered was I had a specific goal. Somebody tried to intervene in that goal, and I thought, I don't need to waste time fighting with that person. I got energized by the anger, and what my goal is just to make sure what I wanted to happen, what's important to me, what my dream is, happens, and not dissipate that energy in conflict with another person. All right. Well, I need to admit this was a little more time than I knew how to talk to myself for. So let me reformat for a minute. I want to talk about some of the books and stimulus that I have had in doing this and some of the amazing people in the world, one of which is Rick Hansen's book called Hardwiring Happiness, which really discusses how we can change patterns in our lives. How do we do it? How does our brain work? How do we move from the critical part of our brain, from the part of our brain, the amygdala, that's triggered to protect us, and say, oh, avoid this situation, avoid that situation, avoid the other situation, and instead, how do we engage that part of ourselves to calm our nervous system down and to have the joy and the celebration and the moving forward, and how do we create those habits? How do we create those patterns? What are the processes of doing habit transformation, process transformation? How do we stop and breathe and listen to the negative voice, listen to the self-criticism, listen to the fear, and then move forward, and then find ways that those are not what we're looking for? So there's his book. There's a book called Evolve Your Brain by Joe Dispenza, which is another wonderful set of exercises and tools for working specifically with changing patterns, for changing habits, for looking at processes in your body, for finding new ways of telling stories. An amazing book by a woman named Carla McLaren called Empathy and Emotion. And she really works about what are the messages from our bodies, from our emotions, and how do we work with that? That anger is about needing boundaries, that fear is a need for more information. So learning to listen somatically to ourselves and engage that and find, what am I feeling? How am I feeling? What do I do? Sorrow is about letting go. This is something I need to release in my life, and stepping in and participating in that fully and allowing it to flow from you. And anger to say, I need a boundary. I need some self-respect here. I need some clarity. I need this not to be my issue. And to celebrate them and not let them take us over. An amazing book by Sheryl Sandberg called Lean In, Women Work and the Will to Lead, and how do we be ourselves in those positions of power and respect and step up and step into those places as women in a different way. How do we do this in a way that supports us, that supports our dream, that supports our vision of the future, that allows us to keep going when things are tough, when we do the trainings, when we do the introspective, when we're creating something new, as we look forward into the future, as we look back into our past, as we come across old habits that trip us up, that trap us, that are our subconscious scripts, where we say, oh, my goodness, I could never do that. I can't do that. I'm shy. I'm not extroverted. I'm not a writer. The stories that we tell ourselves, and then how do we shift those? How do we go back into these skills? What skills do we use? What specific exercises? What belief systems? So which process do we use in an NLP process? Do we use trance? Do we use release work? Do we use changing a belief system? All those things. And how do we do this in a way that supports us? So there's probably way too many questions to say. But I do think it's an exploration. that it's not that there's not a didacticism about this, and so that that's an exploration. How am I getting from here to there? Not like, oh, how am I doing that, but how do I do this? Which, do I go up the hill? Do I go down the hill? Do I want to go around? Do I go through? Do I do more scripting? Do I do more interaction? Do I have questions? And then trying and following the path, seeing where it leads. Getting help and checking back with the dream, checking back with the blueprint. Refining the blueprint, looking at the pieces, looking at the process. What needs to happen? How does it need to happen? And looking at the practical aspects. I mean, one of the things that got me fascinated with NLP was a context exercise where we did a process where you write down a dream that you want to make happen that's really important to you, and you write that on a sticky note, and then on another sticky note you write the most important thing, that thing that you absolutely have to have in order for that to happen. And you do that 7 or 8 times until it's completed, and then you arrange them. If you could only have the first thing in order to make that happen, what would be that? What is the absolute most important thing to make that happen? You look at that, you discuss it, you investigate it. And then if you could have that, and in doing that, you can only have that once. You have to eliminate everything else from your list. It was the only thing you could have of what's absolutely essential to make that happen. And it's a very interesting way of looking at personal beliefs, at personal sustainability. Do you need, is the first step, can I survive while I do this? How do I take care of what Gioia Timpanelli called the kitchen work? How do I take care of making sure body, mind, and soul are together in such a way that I can manifest this dream? Not that gives up the dream, but in a way to manifest it. And then what do I need next? And what is that? And is that more important? So if that is, if personal sustainability is first, and then what comes after that? Stimulus or excitement or the tools to do it with? And it's a fascinating process into insight into one's personal process and the how-to. And as you line those up, you know, how important is your self-sustainability? How important is the community that you do it with? How important is whether or not this is the source of your self-sustainability? How important are other people involved in it? Which then leads you into, you can look at that process and say, oh, okay, this is my first step. This is absolutely true for me that I need to be personally sustainable in this. This is true. I need help in doing this. I need this community. I need this input from people. I need clients. I need students. I need a venue to present in. So these are, when I ask the how questions, these are the tools, that it really is a how. How do I do this? How am I going to support myself while I do this? How am I going to reach out? How am I going to integrate this? How do I move from the place I am in my belief systems to the place that will allow me to do this? And consciously engaging each one of those steps, but consciously engaging each one of those steps with your full being, with your emotions, with your body, with your spirit, with your heart, with your doubt, with your ancestors, and moving forward in a congruent whole where the dream is the dream not just of a part of you, but the whole of you, so that the dream carries the whole being forward through life into the manifestation, so that there is a congruency between the heart, the mind, the body, the soul, and you create then something that feeds your being on all levels, so that you have success that feels successful, that looks successful, and that brings you joy, a place of being personally and deeply integrated. So that's a long rambling version of how to create your bliss, making blueprints for manifesting your dreams. It's a lot of exploration. It's a lot of work. It's a lot of looking. And it's a deep, fascinating, enjoyable enterprise. And there's struggles. There's times when you feel like you're climbing up the mountain indefinitely, that this peak will never come, and then there's the utterly disorienting moment when you get to the peak and look down and now what? I've spent my whole life struggling to get up here, and now where do I go? What is my role now? What do I do? What's the next dream? What is the next step in the dream? And the immediate next step for me is I need to remember to do my little promo pitch here. It's the next show on Blog Talk Life Coach Radio is Sunday, June 29th at 9 p.m. That's Eastern Daylight Time. Mark my words, with certified business and life coach Mark Shaw. That's Mark my words, Sunday, June 29th at 9 p.m. Another wonderful Blog Talk Radio show. I want to thank you for joining me, for listening in, and please tune in to the next show, which is August 11th, which will be Alan Questel, talking about creativity, somatic experience, Feldenkrais, and many other joyous events. Thank you.